This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The battle over Republican redistricting plans in Texas escalating with state Democratic lawmakers walking out to break the quorum of a special legislative session. It comes ahead of an expected vote tomorrow. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
The stakes here are extremely high. This new redrawn map, it could flip 5 seats to Republicans, helping them keep their razor-thin majority in the House. But tonight, Democrats are revolting. They are fleeing the state to block this Republican-led effort. But walking out early, they can only delay passage of this bill. They cannot stop it.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is in Israel. He'll meet with Israeli leaders on Gaza ceasefire talks and on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, with aid groups warning of mass starvation. In Tennessee, police are still searching for the suspect in the murders of 4 family members Friday. Authorities say Austin Drummond let the baby belonging to that family live. 2 others have been charged with helping the suspect flee. This is ABC News. An independent agency moving to open a new federal probe against special counsel Jack Smith. He led criminal investigations into Donald Trump. ABC's Catherine Falder says Republican Tom Cotton of Arkansas made the referral.
President Trump has made clear his desire to use the powers of the presidency to target those he perceives as political enemies. Representatives for Smith did not immediately comment on the investigation, but this investigation is not criminal in nature. And unlike when Smith was a prosecutor, this government agency would have no ability to compel Jack Smith or any other former government official to cooperate with their investigation.
A new study shows some students ages 10 to 17 lose nearly an hour each day of school time due to cell phone usage. That study published in JAMA found smartphone use among those students focused on social media apps like TikTok and Instagram. Many school districts have approved or are considering policies that limit the use of cell phones during school time. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
It's fun to look back and laugh now.
That was a bad day.
There are marriages that have died on less. Our first actual fight as a married couple was about the house rules of playing Monopoly. We've not really played Monopoly since. When you can modify an app, you can modify the rules of the game. Maybe there are times when you are better off just playing the computer. Play something else with your spouse instead.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A former attorney for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives says proposed federal cuts could hinder the agency's ability to keep up with key regulations and affect public safety. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
One ATF responsibility is conducting inspections to ensure gun dealers sell firearms in accordance with federal law. Pam Hicks, a former chief counsel at the agency, says ATF has already struggled to meet inspection goals with not enough resources. The Trump administration's budget cuts would reduce regulatory enforcement by 40%, which Hicks says would only add more limitations to an underfunded agency.
If criminals are using those dealers to acquire guns, law enforcement is less likely to discover that before guns get used in crimes and are more likely to discover it after guns get used in crimes. That is obviously not good and very dangerous.
Hicks says firearms tracing is a critical ATF function to help solve firearms crimes and detect trafficking. According to the ATF, in 2022, more than 8,000 firearms were recovered and traced in Wisconsin. ATF is also required to inspect explosives licensees every 3 years, which Hicks says also drains resources from inspecting gun dealers. She says the entire ATF budget before cuts was less than $2 billion. Hicks argues the cuts would provide minimal cost savings and reduce public safety. She sees this as a contradiction to a Trump administration stated goal of making America safe again.
To be clear, I do think they genuinely are interested in doing things about violent crime. I take them at their word on that. But their budget submissions just don't align with that. And I'm not sure why.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
With a look at your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, we'll see partly cloudy skies, some smoke still out there, a low around 58. Areas of smoke on your Monday, otherwise mostly sunny, and highs in the low 80s. Monday night, partly cloudy, 61. For Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high of 83. Currently, 78 degrees.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us Monday for an important show. Measles is on the rise. Vaccinations are down. We talk to the folks at Wisconsin Watch and what that means for you. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX. La Crosse is home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick us off for the second hour, we have the Maggie Dawn Show. In this segment, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez joins the Maggie Dawn Show to discuss the announcement of her 2026 gubernatorial run. Drawing on her healthcare background and bipartisan credentials, Rodriguez outlines a platform focused on expanding healthcare access, as well as addressing housing shortages and supporting small
businesses.
Welcome
back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me and us. Really excited as the race for the governor's mansion heats up. We are very pleased to welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show and the Civic Media Radio Network sitting current Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez and perhaps our state's next governor. Welcome back to the program, Sarah. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just jump right in. Why did you decide to enter what is certain to be a very crowded primary field for governor? Was it just the next obvious step? What do you hope to do? What do you hope to bring to the state that compelled you to run?
So it took a lot of decision making, a lot of conversations with my family, with my friends to make this decision. The reason why I am running for governor is because, number one, I think I can do the best job. And it is so important that we keep the governor's seat in Democratic hands. We see over and over again at the federal level the chaos that's coming out of the Trump administration. We need steady, stable, sober leadership at the state level so that we can mitigate some of these really awful policies that are coming out of the federal government. Things that people might not know about me is that I have spent way longer in a career outside of politics, outside of elected office, than I have spent in it. So I'm a nurse by background. I have been a healthcare executive. I've been an executive at a Fortune 100 company. So I've got that outside executive experience, plus working within the administration, I've been able to see what Governor Evers has done up close and how the administration works. These are the kind of things that I can bring to the table. When I ran for assembly, I live in Ruby Red, Waukesha, and I was able to flip a district from red to blue. So I know what it takes to win hard races here in Wisconsin. We are a purple state. It is going to take a lot of fortitude, a lot of strength to get us across that finish line. And I think that I'm going to be able to do that.
One of the things that I frequently talk about on this program, and for lack of a better handle or term for it, it's Maggie's suggestions to listeners as to what they should look for in elected officials that is completely separate and apart for what initial happens to be behind a candidate's name. And it is real world experience that can be within government, actually running something, trying to get it done. But also, of course, from the private sector, trying to lead people, trying to lead organizations, seeing organizations in periods of change or tension, right? That's so important. Tell people a little bit about what you bring from your experience as an executive at a Fortune 100 company, as a nurse working in an ER with your master's in public health. Why is that so important when it comes to running a government that is the entire state of Wisconsin's executive branch?
So I have run large divisions before within large agencies. And so I know what that's like to be able to supervise people and to be able to put strategic plans in place. And we have goals, we have objectives to be able to get across that finish line. That's what people want from their state government. They want us to be working for the people of Wisconsin. As Lieutenant Governor, I have been able to travel to all 72 counties every single year that I've been Lieutenant Governor. I will continue to do that in this job. And I listen. And I listen to see what people want from their state government, what they want from their elected officials. And what I'm hearing is that families are being squeezed, that they are doing everything right, yet they can't make ends meet. And whether that's expensive healthcare and it's not accessible to them, we've got hospital systems that are closing, housing is just out of reach for so many people. I was just in Sheboygan today. Their vacancy rate for rentals is less than 1%. Less than 1%. And they tell me that for it to be like a healthy vacancy level within that city, it should be around 7%. So less than 1%. So people are having to commute for long distances to come into work in Sheboygan. That's not something that we should be tolerating here in Wisconsin. Childcare, goodness. I mean, I talk to families all the time. A, it's almost impossible to find it. I talked to women who were calling childcare providers when they were thinking about getting pregnant. They had to wait that long on wait lists. And then once you do get childcare, it's about the same amount of money as either your rent or your mortgage. Like, that is really expensive for families who are just trying to make ends meet. And lastly, we need to restore union bargaining rights in Wisconsin, because we know that if we do that, it will lift wages for everybody across the state. So those are the kind of things I'm focused on. I've seen that in the real world as a nurse in the emergency department. I was a nurse in the ER before we had the Affordable Care Act. So I saw what it was like when we did not have that coverage. And that's what the federal government is trying to take away today. They're cutting Medicaid. They're getting rid of subsidies on the exchanges of the Affordable Care Act. They're taking food out of children's mouths to basically give billionaires another yacht, a big tax cut so they can get another yacht. I know Wisconsinites don't want that. And so that's why I'm running for governor, to make sure that we can put solutions in place that people of Wisconsin want.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez with us this half hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Let's get into that. It's always fascinating to me, Lieutenant Governor, that when we look at polls and folks are asked questions about reaching across the aisle and compromise and bipartisanship, people nearly universally will say, yes, I want to see more of that because I'd like to see government actually get things done. And yet when it comes time for the voting, our system, specifically in primaries, tends to reward candidates that speak almost exclusively to their base, to turn out the base during our primary process, given that we've got this antiquated two-party system. And then you have to make a pivot once you're in the general election to try to appeal to a much broader cross-section of voters. Lieutenant Governor, what's your plan to try to, one, unify Democrats to avoid the fractures that I think sometimes very hard fidelity to the most left policy planks of the Democratic Party can lead to? And then secondly, bridge and keep open the party to conservatives of good faith, independents, and swing voters?
Well, that's what I love about the Democratic Party, is we have clearly established that we are a big tent party. We have a lot of people with a lot of ideas, but there are consistent pillars of what we want. We want to make sure that people have a fair shot, that they are able to have a fair shot at a good living, that they have a job that they can pay for what they need and have a little bit of fun. Maybe take a vacation once a year. That's what people want. We want to make sure that everybody's rights are respected across the board. And I would tell you that living in Waukesha County, in a red county, if I talk about these things, if I talk about infrastructure, I talk about public schools, I talk about human basic civil rights and human rights, the vast majority of people who I talk to agree with me. And so we need to talk about all of those different pieces that are exactly the same across many of us, particularly in the Democratic Party. And we can have all those conversations about how we get there, but the reality is that in the Democratic Party, our goal is the same. We want to make sure that people have access to healthcare, a good public education, a job that puts food on the table and allows you to have a little bit of fun, that you can negotiate with your boss and be a union member if you'd like to. These are the kind of things that I know people agree with. I know Wisconsinites want. I mean, if you look across the state, red, blue, purple area, let's just talk about public school funding. Referendums passed in Wisconsin, overwhelmingly, people are voting to raise their own taxes so that they can support their public schools. Well, guess what? We should be able to put more money in the state budget so that they don't have to do that. They don't have to raise their taxes to support their own public schools. We should be doing that from the state level. Those are the kind of things that I know we can have consensus upon. I know it's something that the Democratic Party has as in their platform, and it's something that's going to be speaking to others out there in Wisconsin.
Lieutenant Governor, is there a surprising policy or proposal that folks maybe haven't heard about that you're thinking about adding into your campaign, or that you have added into your campaign to help cut through what I'm going to call the hyper-partisanship of this right. of this moment?
So I think it's not an or, but an and, right? We want to support small businesses. We want to make sure that our administrative policies and our legislation supports the small businesses that are the lifeblood of Wisconsin. And so anything we can do to look at tax policy there is something that I'm absolutely open to. Particularly when I talk to small businesses, they're struggling with these tariffs that the federal government has put in, Trump and the Republicans have put in. I talked to two small business owners the other day. They're not even purchasing goods for Christmas, for the holiday season, because they know it's going to cost more. They don't want to increase prices on their customers, so they're just going to ride it out for this particular holiday season. That's really sad that that's what our small business owners are having to do, because their margins are so tight. So we need to be supporting that. And then number two, we need to get more housing. Absolutely across the board. There are other states that have looked at this and said, how can we streamline this process? How can we make sure housing is safe, but how can we make sure that it can be built quickly, safely, and it can lower costs for everybody? So those are the kind of things that I'm going to be looking at in terms of, even as Lieutenant Governor, looking at. But then as we move forward with my campaign as governor, trying to make sure we implement some of those areas where we can just streamline government so it just works for everybody just a little bit better.
Yeah, I think it's so important for both candidates and, frankly, people that do my job to talk about what I'm going to call common sense policies yeah. that help what are the engines of our economy, our small business owners. And yes, that means looking at tax policy and regulations that impact those small business owners, the regulatory structure, the zoning laws and rules that impact our ability to quickly and efficiently get housing stock onto the market to bring down those prices. Yeah, a less than 1% vacancy rate in a rental market means people will be paying outlandishly high rents in that mm-hmm. marketplace. And that's a phenomenon we're seeing from Sheboygan to Racine to Kenosha, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison. It's everywhere. I hear from our listeners all the time about that. And candidly, Lieutenant Governor, I don't think Democrats talk about that problem nearly mm-hmm. enough. So bravo to you. When we come back, I would like to hear more about how you're going to differentiate yourself from our current sitting governor. And we want to get into how do we break through this us and them framework that seems to be defining this moment of our politics. We do have a couple of minutes. Let me just start with, how do you respond to folks that say, she's the current lieutenant governor, she'll just be another Tony Evers?
Well, I would say that Tony Evers has done an amazing job. He has done such wonderful work for Wisconsin. He has set the foundation, he has set us up, and I'm gonna knock it out of the park. But the reality is that we are very different people, and we have very different experiences that we come from. He had such an expertise in education. I have such a strong healthcare background. Healthcare is complicated. You might want somebody who understands all the parts of healthcare to be able to look at this, especially with all of the changes coming from the federal government. That's the strength I have. Number two, I've worked outside in private industry before, so I understand those things. I've started my own small business. So we do have things that differentiate us. We're going to approach things differently, but he has done a fantastic job for Wisconsin.
Folks, you're not going to want to go anywhere. We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. She just announced her candidacy for governor of the great state of Wisconsin. We'll talk about trying to become Wisconsin's first woman elected governor here in the state, and also how we break through the us versus them dynamic defining politics today. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Americans really like voting by mail and in-person early voting. That, according to 2024 statistics from the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. According to EAC, 158,211,780 citizens voted out of 211,144,275 active registered voters, a 74.8% turnout, 3 points lower than 2020. Among the 158 million voters, 52.8 million voted in person on Election Day. But far more Americans voted early, with 46.8 million voting early by mail and almost 48.9 million voting early in person. Mail-in voting accounted for 30.3% of votes cast, with some states offering universal mail balloting or permanent mail or absentee lists. Over 15 million ballots were returned via drop boxes in 36 states, up 10% since 2022. The percentage of in-person Election Day voters dropped in 2024 to only 37.4%, while in-person early voting jumped to 35.2%. The combination of mail and early in-person totaled 65.5%. It's clear that early voting is here to stay. We've linked to the report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WISS, Oshkosh, and Appleton. Here is Lisa Hale with this morning's Valley Focus.
I'm Northeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief Lisa Hale, and joined today, I've got Karen Schneider from the Oshkosh Noon Kiwanis with me. Let's talk a little bit about the Children's Parade. I know you're involved in it, and it's going to be huge in Oshkosh this Saturday.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. I hope so. We have been working on this for months with the Oshkosh Noon Kiwanis. So the Children's Parade stopped in 2013, and then we're bringing it back with our service organization. And it starts at 11 o'clock this Saturday. So kids are registering. They're bringing their non-motorized, no motorized vehicles are in this parade, the non-motorized floats. And it's really cool to listen to people about when they were in it, because it ran for 83, 84 years or something like that. So like three generations. So you hear these people talking about it. And I just, I had our final planning meeting at Kiwanis yesterday. And one of the members was talking about someone who had been in it and had dressed up as Kiss. And I understand that their kids may be pulling that second, that a repeat on that for the parade and coming as dressed as Kiss members. So, you know, it's very cool. And So it's going to go from Whitman Field down Ohio Street to South Park. So it's a different parade.
Right. Here.
So different route. Times have changed and so forth. So it's going down Ohio Street. Starts at 11 o'clock. Please come and line the streets if your kids aren't in it or your grandkids. Come and just if you remember what it was used to be,
right.
Come and cheer them on. Right now, I think we're around 40-ish or so on entrees. Oh, my gosh. Entries to, and registrations to be in the parade. And they go from, you know, one to two and five plus. I think we've got twirlers and everything coming to be in the parade. So I'm really looking forward to it because that's not in my purview. Someone else is handling the registrations. So I'm just getting bits and pieces about what the entries are going to be. So I'm really looking excited to see the imagination and creativity that people put into this. But you can just come down on your bicycle with those little cards flipped to it and, you know, come in and join the fun. Just register. And then once you get to South Park, it's a family day.
Right.
So we have a lot of events going on there as well. All of the kids in the parade will get a goodie bag when they enter South Park. We have a little mongoose bike that kids who participate, who want to sign up to win it, can put in as well. We're going to have a petting zoo that's going to be there. We have lots of organizations that are coming with kids activities and everything. Have live music with the Mason Street Band.
Nice.
And then the pavilion will be open with cold beverages and food trucks. So we have food trucks there, everything from barbecue to snow cones, folks. So I really hope that you come down and visit with us from 11 to 3 on Saturday for the Children's Day Parade. And we know there's always so much stuff going on.
Yeah, there is.
And whether you come for the parade, which will be from, let's say, 10 to 11, or come down for the events that are going on at the park, or all of it, we welcome you. And we really look forward to seeing the community come out and enjoy bringing back the Children's Day Parade.
You hear a lot of people say things like, there needs to be more stuff for children, you know, what can I do for children? And this is one of those examples of the things that are specifically designed for the kiddos in the area.
Just for the kiddos, absolutely. And I remember watching this too. I never participated, but I have friends who are in their 70s that did, you know, so which is kind of funny, but and they have great memories. But it's about bringing the kids out, letting them be creative, having a day to say, look at me, you know, because everyone gets to participate, and then go to the park and really have some fun. You know, we have Homies Hub coming, and they have a lot of stuff that is going to be set up. The police are coming out at 1 o'clock with their trailer. So there's going to be a lot of things for people to enjoy. Bring your lawn chairs, sit out in the lawn and listen to Mason Street Band because they'll be playing. But it ends at 3 o'clock. So you can come enjoy it. It's going to, the weather, thank you, is going to be absolutely gorgeous.
It is.
So come out, spend the day with the kiddos and stuff at South Park, take them home, give them a nap or so, and then take them to the fair at night. So
perfect idea.
You know?
Yeah. Cause the fair kicks off Thursday.
Yes.
Tomorrow. So that's perfect. Do the children's parade, then do the fair. Weekend,
you know, because we are in Oshkosh, right?
And exactly,
we have 12 weekends to cram a whole year's worth of entertainment in. But I'm really looking forward to this. My group has been working on this for months, and I think we've pulled all the missing strings into that one little handful, and we got this down. And I'm looking forward to seeing the efforts pay off and enjoying seeing the community come out and join us.
Now, the children's parade it took a hiatus for a
Correct.
Little while. So do you go ahead and you call it the 87th children's parade without the annual after it? Or how are you going to do that?
You know, that's kind of funny. I was wondering about that on the way over because we haven't called it anything except the Children's Day Parade at uh-huh. this point. We'll have to figure that out next year.
Definitely. Definitely.
Next year. And next year, you know, it's like August 1st. So it'll be the first Saturday after EAA because we're at the Whitman Airport. Mm-hmm. So we can't go there during EAA, obviously.
Right.
And I just asked at the Parks Department when I picked up the keys, like, can I reserve this yet? 365 days. Okay, so I got it. I know to go on online right away and reserve for next year, because we are hoping that this is a signature event for the Oshkosh Noon Kiwanis, and it's a fundraiser as well. So we'll be using it to support our programs with the Key Clubs and the Cops and Kids and Cops and Kiwanis and Kids, which are literacy programs where we provide hundreds and hundreds of books throughout the year to the police to hand out. But we also provide gift cards to the police that they can give out to people in need as well. So part of this will be funding that program, and part of it will also fund the newspapers and education through the Oshkosh Herald and our Kids Scoop program too. So although it's a great community event, it's also going to do great things as we support our community with the different programs that we have in place.
I'm so excited that it's back, and I'm so excited about this. And thank you for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The battle over Republican redistricting plans in Texas escalating, with state Democratic lawmakers walking out to break the quorum of a special legislative session. It comes ahead of an expected vote tomorrow. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
The stakes here are extremely high. This new redrawn map, it could flip 5 seats to Republicans, helping them keep their razor-thin majority in the House. But tonight, Democrats are revolting. They are fleeing the state to block this Republican-led effort. But walking out early, they can only delay passage of this bill. They cannot stop it.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is in Israel. He'll meet with Israeli leaders on Gaza ceasefire talks and on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, with aid groups warning of mass starvation. In Tennessee, police are still searching for the suspect in the murders of 4 family members Friday. Authorities say Austin Drummond let the baby belonging to that family live. 2 others have been charged with helping the suspect flee. This is ABC News.
The Brewers get the sweep. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers with another decisive win over the struggling Nationals in Washington, 14-3. That completes a 3-game sweep for Milwaukee, as they now head to Atlanta to take on the Braves tomorrow night. Some more injury news, though, for the crew. Starting pitcher Jacob Mizorowski placed on the 15-day IL. The Miz still dealing with a severe bruised shin after he was hit by a ball while on the mound against the Cubs last week. And last night, outfielder Sal Frelick had to leave the game after his second at bat. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Knee problem again, the same thing. It's part of his meniscus. He's had surgery on it back in 19, and yeah, the doctors will have to tell you what they think.
NFL, the Packers under the lights last night in Green Bay with family night.
What a great environment, man. That's great for our football team to get out there, and everybody's juices are flowing to get to our preseason games and get the Jets here next week.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Pamela Anderson has been married 5 times. Once to Tommy Lee, once to Robbie Ritchie, also known as Kid Rock, twice to a professional poker player, and only 1 time to some guy named Dan. She must love marriage. One of the few men she did not marry was former Superman actor Dean Cain. Last week, Cain said he and Anderson's relationship fizzled for one reason. I know what you're thinking. It's because she was too busy getting married to other men. But no. But Cain says that's not why. He says things didn't last because he was never into life in the fast lane, and Anderson was. That, along with the fact that she got married every other week, was probably a hindrance. Cain did have a lot of good things to say about Anderson. Pamela Anderson has revived her career and has gotten serious about the craft of acting. She received rave reviews for Showgirl and currently stars in The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson. They were, quote, caught, end quote, on the set of The Tonight Show making out. Yes, the two are dating, unless they've already married by the time of this airing. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
With a look at your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, we'll see partly cloudy skies, some smoke still out there, a low around 58. Areas of smoke on your Monday, otherwise mostly sunny, and highs in the low 80s. Monday night, partly cloudy, 61. For Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high of 83. Currently, 78 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
NFL Hall of Famer, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Joe Thomas. You were telling us a little bit about being drafted number 3. You skipped the draft.
I went fishing that day, and I never did it for anything other than I just much rather spend the day fishing with my dad, and I'm hoping that that's a story that keeps being told and gives people a reason. Like, you know what, instead of working today, I'm going to go fishing with my kid. I'm going to make the time because it's impactful. It's memories that they're going to remember for the rest of their life.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday morning, Up North News reporter Selena Heller will talk to Jimmy Cuska, Jane Mattiner.
And me.
Oh, that's Dr. Kristen Lierley. She'll be here too.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We're here with the third segment of the Civic Media Spotlight. In this segment, we have Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Did you know Medicare and Medicaid turned 60 years old this week? Well, Pat believes that should have been a cause for celebration, for the untold number of lives made better through healthcare security for the retired, the disabled, and other at-risk populations. Instead, that level of security is threatened like never before. And not to save taxpayers any money, simply to pay for tax cuts for the wealthiest among us. Tune in as Pat dissects this issue.
We'll be talking about the 60th anniversary of Medicare and Medicaid in just a sec, but first, this is what you could call a bifurcated show. We play on various levels at the same time. You could call this the 3D chess of radio shows. And what I mean by that is that all along the 10 stations that we're on and the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin, a few times throughout the show, some of the local stations will break away and have a local news update, but some of us will continue to jibber-jabber here out of Chippewa Falls and talk about other issues. And then we have the opportunity to play that back later the next day for folks who maybe didn't get to hear it the first time. Maybe they were away, or maybe there was a local update, which begs this question. Hey, Pat, how can I always hear what you're doing on here? Here's what you do. You get us as a podcast as well. Go to Spotify and subscribe. Follow the program. You can do it at Apple or any place else as well. And that way, if you hear that we've talked to somebody and you missed it and you want to come back to it, very easy to do right there on your device. So, for example, we have a new segment at 7:50 on Tuesday mornings called Way Up North, where we have a rotating series of guests from Superior, Ashland, Bayfield, you know, the whole Lake Superior, South Shore area. And yesterday we talked to State Representative Angela Stroud, who is a freshman lawmaker going through her first state budget process. And so here's part of our conversation about her impressions on the budget and why she was a no vote on it. But first, I asked her to comment on the announcement that Governor Tony Evers would not be running for a third term next year.
You know, I really didn't know in the days leading up whether he was going to run or not. People said, what's your gut feeling? And I'm like, don't have one. I'm really 50-50 on it. Tony Evers is a true public servant. He's not one who was in this for ego, not one who had a really hard time letting go of power, I think. And so he did this to serve. He really served well. He, you know, 2 terms is a lot for a governor. It's a really hard job. He deserves to spend time with his family. He's a truly decent person who I think just wants to go back and be a grandpa and a husband and live life and enjoy it. So I'm really happy for him that he gets to do that and grateful for his service.
And now we get into the mixed bag of politics, and that is to be thankful for his service, but he has faced a fair share of criticism, as have others who are part of the state budget process, that it didn't turn out the way that perhaps it could have, depending on how people use their leverage or their negotiating skills or what have you. And the, you know, you going through the state budget process for the first time, is it fair to say it wasn't the most positive experience now that you've seen how the sausage is made firsthand?
That is very fair to say. This is not how you should run a state. And, you know, there are people involved in these negotiations who I would refer to them as lions, but that's an insult to lions. they're willing to do whatever it takes to retain power, hold on to power, get what they want. And so, you know, I said Tony Evers is a truly decent person. That's not true of many of the people he's negotiating with. And so it's a really, really difficult thing to watch, the budget process. It is not good governance. Things thrown in at the last minute that could never pass if they had to go through the regular legislative process. It's disturbing. It's not how I hope we do things in the future. But if it is how we do things, then Democrats need to get really savvy about making it work for us and making the best choices we possibly can in a context where we don't always control the rules.
Yeah, especially when you consider that the state budget bill, that's the one bill that must pass, you know, theoretically. And so it gets so much shoved into it that, like you say, would never pass as a standalone measure. For me, the most obvious of those would be the voucher school program. In 30 years, until 2 years ago, it never was up as a standalone bill. It was always crammed into a budget bill, and that's how it got to be the behemoth that it is now. So we have the model that we're going to have for a while yet, and it is a matter of, again, how you're using leverage in negotiations. But now that that window is closed for this session, what are your priorities in terms of, you know, trailer bills, follow-up bills, or just, you know, separate legislation that you want to be working on?
There's so much. I mean, there's big picture stuff. You know, a lot of what Democrats are doing right now is preparing to govern after the next election. We know Robin Voss is not going to move any Democratic idea forward in the assembly. That's just a fact. He's made that very clear. And so what we're doing now is setting the groundwork for when dynamics change. I mean, we'll keep trying. There's no quit in assembly Democrats. But and so for me, there are good governance issues to work on. There are specific pieces of legislation around air quality and environmental issues. There's specific legislation around the UW system. And so I'm working on a range of things. For me, it's always district specific. And, you know, the 73rd has some problems to solve, and that's what I'm here for.
So there again was State Representative Angela Stroud talking to us on the program yesterday in our Way Up North segment. Now let's turn our attention to the calendar and this Wednesday, July 30th, which marks the 60th anniversary of when President Lyndon Johnson signed the Social Security Act of 1965 into law, establishing Medicare and Medicaid. And I think until recently, it was a huge percentage of people that did not really have a clear idea of the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. They sound like these bureaucratic words that get jumbled a lot. And I think more recently, because of the threat to those programs, people are becoming a bit more understanding of the differences between them. Medicare, that's America's promise to its workers that after a lifetime of work, you will have access to health care and not have to worry about illness or injury causing poverty in your old age. 66 million Americans are currently served by Medicare. Medicaid is an American promise of compassion, that those with disabilities will not have to beg on street corners for the health care they need, and that those who fall on tough times will have at least one option for stable, affordable health care when all of the other for-profit private insurance corporations would rather reject you or bleed you dry with jacked-up premiums. Now, there are those who say that the 71 million Americans on Medicaid, well, that's too many. I say, why isn't every American deserving of stable, affordable health care? After all, they have figured it out in every other developed country, and in many of those countries, they now have longer lifespans, they have fewer moms and babies dying, they have better education outcomes. So to the MAGA folks who support the Trump big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill, and it's $930 billion, almost $1 trillion of upcoming cuts to Medicaid, because they say too many folks are claiming low enough incomes to qualify, I ask simply, why is that the case in America? In the richest nation on earth, why aren't we doing more to address why so many Americans have incomes low enough to qualify for Medicaid? Why are people who work full-time jobs for some of America's biggest corporations still making so little in pay that they qualify for Medicaid, that our taxes subsidize their health care? Why are the corporations and the billionaires behind them sticking us with the bill? Walmart made $19 billion in profit last year. And a big chunk of its workers make pay low enough to qualify that they're on Medicaid. McDonald's made $8 billion in profit. That's pure profit. And yet has a big chunk of its workers making low enough wages to qualify for Medicaid. Amazon, $59 billion. And still, so many Amazon workers are on Medicaid, coverage that we pay for, that they don't pay for, that they don't pay for health insurance that covers their workers. How could that be? Well, they make big campaign contributions, and they've got people in Congress looking out for them, carving out exemptions. According to the Government Accountability Office, nearly half of adult Medicaid enrollees, 48%, and a little more than half of SNAP beneficiaries, 51%, who get what we used to call food stamps. Okay, about half of adult Medicaid enrollees, about half of SNAP beneficiaries work at least 35 hours a week. And more than half of them work for large companies, meaning 100 or more employees. So it's not that they're working for some tiny business that can't afford health insurance. These companies can. They choose not to. I mean, Republicans cannot stop talking about their glee about adding work requirements to Medicaid, and yet it's clear that lots of working Americans are already on Medicaid, and the ones who aren't can't. The people who love to talk about getting rid of red tape for corporations have become masters of putting red tape in the way of health care through work requirements and all kinds of other paperwork for children, for families, for the disabled, for the elderly, all while cutting red tape and taxes for the very wealthy. So if indeed there are deadbeats, and I don't doubt that there are, but where's the enforcement? Seriously, where? We talked about this with Elon Musk and Doge as well. It is a crime to defraud the government, to defraud the taxpayers. Why isn't this administration, frankly, doing more perp walks instead of sending its U.S. attorneys and federal prosecutors against its political enemies? Why isn't it making a show of the alleged welfare queens that they say are out there? Because paying for enforcement would mean increasing the budget to an agency, even if it's for the right thing. After all, look at the IRS. What are they cutting there? They're cutting enforcement so that people can continue at high income levels to cheat the system. Whereas if you beefed up enforcement against tax cheats, and if you beefed up enforcement against people who are defrauding Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, or anything else, you'd have a public that was grateful rather than fearful. Look, we've had 60 years to make Medicaid stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 15 years to make the Affordable Care Act stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 20 years to make Medicare Part D stronger. And instead, prescription drug prices are about to get a lot higher. And on top of all of that, on Medicare's side of the equation, there's Medicare Advantage, something that we've talked about previously, with those slick commercials, often with celebrities, that say, choose our Medicare Advantage plan because we have so many more bells and whistles. Medicare Advantage is a way for private for-profit insurance companies to get in on the action. They promise all kinds of extra benefits, but what you get instead are networks, like the old HMOs, and God forbid you try to go out of network because you'll pay more or you'll get denied your coverage. And you get more denials of coverage under Medicare Access anyway. I mean, there are many who say that Medicare Advantage has turned out to be one big taxpayer scam, and who am I to disagree with them? All told, we are about to see 12 million Americans lose access to affordable health insurance, either through cuts to Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act. And it's not like that happens in a vacuum. When they go without stable, affordable health care, when some of us go without that, the rest of us have to pay for that. So, happy birthday, Medicaid and Medicare. Hopefully we can make you live up to your promise sometime in the near future if you're not killed off in the meantime. Today's history lesson is next. You're up north.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. With Governor Tony Evers choosing not to run for a third term, that means we're going to have the first open race for governor in 16 years. We already know who some of the candidates will be. On the Democratic side, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez launched her campaign, and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he's running. On the Republican side, Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and Southeastern Wisconsin Business Executive Bill Berrien are running. Many more are expected to join the race. And it's not just governor that will have an open race. We could see open races for attorney general, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, too. Couple that with what's happening in the state legislature, no longer under gerrymandered maps, the year 2026 is going to bring a rather unique moment for voters in Wisconsin to determine the path forward on a fresh new era for the state. I know some can be wary of change, but let's embrace this as the real opportunity that it is.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Baby bald eagles near the Great Lakes are testing positive for PFAS and other toxic chemicals. Researchers found that eagles living near the Great Lakes had 6 times more toxic chemicals in their bloodstreams than inland populations. Other chemicals found in the baby eagles' bloodstreams were DDT and PCBs, which were banned decades ago. A small Wisconsin school district just got some big clean energy bragging rights. The Elva Strum School District in Trempealeau County unveiled 184 ground mount solar panels that will deliver about 20% of the district's energy needs and will be a living classroom for students to learn about solar energy and energy data. The installation cost $150,000 and will pay for itself through energy bill savings in about 8 years. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years.
Yeah.
To let a story unfold or to find a story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
To finish out our Civic Media Spotlight, we have the John and Gordy Show. On the show, John and Gordy got the pleasure of meeting Patrick McBride, who was previously a ball boy for the Milwaukee Brewers and an author of The Luckiest Boy in the World. Considering this was the day that John and Gordy were going to a Cubs vs. Brewers game, they mentioned how big of a rivalry those two teams have. And Patrick also talks about getting to know Bob Uecker, as well as preparing for another book.
We're ready, man.
Yeah.
Well, so, to the left and deep. Hey! Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Yelich!
WNDX. John and Gordy.
Along with Patrick McBride. As the voice of Bob Uecker. Got a few more minutes here, but let me just mention this portion of the show brought to you by Verlo Mattress. Wake up and sleep better on a Verlo mattress. A lot has changed since 1958, but some things have remained constant throughout Verlo's history. They're direct to consumer and provide superior products at unbeatable prices. Verlo Mattress, 2 Madison locations, east and west. And just go to verlo.com for more information. Also being brought to you by Madison Hearing Aid Center, 4706 Cottage Grove Road in Madison. give them a call, 608-249-4077. They are helping people change their lives. Their number one goal isn't just selling hearing aids. It's improving the quality of life through better hearing. Check them out at MadisonHearingAidsCenter.com. Okay, now we're back with Patrick McBride, who's written this great book, The Luckiest Boy in the World. He's been telling us all kinds of stories. And
yeah.
You met all kinds of great baseball stars and basketball stars and Packers, but tell us a little bit more about your time with Bob Uecker and getting to know him pretty well.
Bob Uecker, his whole career, I mean, I preceded him by a year, but it's 1970. I was 16 years old, and I ended up getting my tonsils taken out, and I was in St. Mary's Hospital, and I'm listening to the Brewers game, and all of a sudden... Bob Uecker's talking to the great Merle Harmon, and he says, "Hey, Merle, you know our bat boy's in the hospital, just had his tonsils taken out, and I hope that he doesn't bring them back to the stadium, but I'd like to give a shout-out to Pat McBride and wish him well with his tonsils, and get well, Pat, and come on back to the stadium and hustle like you always do. Now let's bring up Lou Krause.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, I was like, holy crap. Ready to put on my uniform.
Too bad you didn't have a recording of that one.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, the guy was always like that. Yeah. You know, he's always local. You know, here's this national figure.
Yes.
National television. Johnny Carson show.
Yes.
Number one guest of all time. Mm-hmm. But he always, and I just ran into the head of Usinger's at a get together, John Usinger. And the guy said, always mentioned Usinger's, even though the sponsor was Johnsonville Bronx. Yeah. And he'd always slip in Usinger's because he was the friend of Usinger's Bronx, you know. And the guy just always cared about everybody in Milwaukee. You know, he'd always be like, well, Mabel up in Omro just won the Bratwurst special for, you know what I mean?
I remember those.
Remember that?
He was just bringing people up, and everybody was equal to him, you know?
Everybody.
It wasn't like a special interest or they advertise and they don't advertise. You know, he just everybody was included.
He'd go outside of the press box and go sneak up and sit next to a couple from Anago, and they'd be sitting there, you know, excited about the game. And I said, oh, my God, it's Bob Uecker. I mean, and he was just... he was a Milwaukee kid, period. Yeah. Never changed.
Me too.
Never changed, did we? We're all Milwaukee kids, eh?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So you're thinking about another book.
Yeah.
Are you in?
Yeah,
I'm seriously
thinking about
writing.
I'm already got it sketched out. It's going to be about the imposter syndrome, and I'm going to talk about kids that just don't believe that they can really make something out of themselves. Because, you know, a lot of us grew up in tough circumstances or... never really believed that we can get to where we want to get. I never believed that I could get out of school. I never believed that I could go to college. I never believed I could go to medical school. But mentors, people kept propping me up, pushing me up. Mm-hmm. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. And actually, I think Kareem wrote a book called On the Shoulders of Giants. Mm-hmm. And I remember a mentor saying that to me. We stand on the shoulders of giants. And I'm sure that's true in the broadcasting world right? Yeah. I mean, you had people that said, do it.
Yeah.
And who gets behind the microphone? It's a scary place to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did it. And then I'd say, I don't think I could do that. You know, and then somebody said, let's do it together. And then we do it together. And that's true of all these sports teams. I'm telling you, you know, when you get five people together on a court, you get nine people on a field, you know, there's somebody standing right there with you, you know. Mm-hmm. You strike out, I'm telling you, these guys pull together. You watch tonight.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, nine people. Murphy, watch what he says to these people in the locker room on these YouTubes. It's really, you do it as a team. So I want to write about imposter syndrome. I want to write about a lot of the stories where I watch people do that. You know, when you watch Oscar Robertson get in a rookie's face and tell him he can do it, that rookie did it out of fear. More than confidence. Because if you screw up, Oscar Robertson's going to put you
right there. Wow. People want to find your books, they can get them all at the usual places.
Yeah, they can get them in local bookstores here in Madison and on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Patrick McBride, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, John and Gordy, you guys are the greatest.
Can't wait for the game tonight, and thanks for getting us all revved up and ready to go.
Go crew.
I know. It's two guys that really aren't big into sports, but this guy loves the Cubs. And,
you know, I'm a Cubs fan, true blue.
And if you're a Cubs fan,
I know.
You can talk sports even if you don't know anything about it.
You know what? It's great for baseball.
It is.
And you know what? They got beer there.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They had bratwurst.
Yes, yes.
It
yes,
makes it
yes.
all better.
You know, when I was there, just quick story, they did not have bratwurst anywhere in any stadium except Milwaukee. And they say, go get me one of those white sausages. That's what the players have. And in the bullpen, they trade baseballs for bratwurst. Mm. And now everybody's got bratwurst.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know. We're going to have a few of those tonight, definitely.
Yeah,
Pat, thank you.
Guys.
Thank
All
you,
right.
Pat.
We will.
It's Patrick McBride. That's going to do it for John and Gordy for today. Stephanie Miller is coming up next. And then, we're off to the Cubs and Brewers evening.
We'll have a day off tomorrow, but we'll have reruns of some great stuff. Yep. So check it out. And some new material as well.
Yep. Have a great day. We'll talk to you very soon, right?
All right. Yeah, okay. We will.
Are you all ready for the game?
Never
ready. Are
you
taking the space car?
I am taking the space car, yes.
Excellent. All right. I'll meet you there.
Thank you.
So long. So long, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let the sun
shine. It's the John and Gordy
Show. The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. The Republican Attorney General of Texas is demanding the arrests of 51 state Democrats who fled Texas to sink a vote to hand President Trump 5 Republican House seats by redrawing the districts.
Critics of this MAC say that it is suppressing voters of color by splitting up their vote across Republican districts. And Democratic Representative Jasmine Crockett is calling the map discriminatory, saying that she's been drawn out of the district where she lives.
ABC Selena Wang. 33 more Gazans are reported dead at food distribution sites today. The UN saying Israel's war is blocking the safe delivery of aid.
There are literally mountains and mountains of aid waiting here to be delivered to the desperate people of Gaza.